Hey folks, I'm here to make a big announcement. Tuesday, June 3rd at 8 p.m. at Strange Brew in Austin, Texas, we will be doing a live How Did I Get Here podcast recording at 8 p.m. Come on out. My guests will be Susanna Schaffel, Elizabeth McQueen, Jazz Mills, and for the first time on the show, the voice you're hearing right here, my bandmate in Skyrocket, Trish Murphy. So come on out to Strange Brew Tuesday, June 3rd at 8 p.m. That's in Austin, Texas. Live conversation, live podcast recording. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great, great show for you today. Today we go out of the world of musicians and into the world of broadcasters slash podcasters slash internet personalities. My guest today is the incredibly funny DJ from KLBJ in Austin, Texas, CJ Morgan. That's right. He's a very strong personality. He's also got podcasts. He's out there. He's doing stuff. He's always on the internet. He's a very public personality, and he has a fabulous mustache and a cute little dog that he brought to our interview. Anyway, I've seen him on the internet. I've heard him on the radio, and I thought, man, this would be an interesting conversation. Maybe I'll get together with CJ, sit down, talk about the realities of things going on, if you will. So we did. He came over, and we sat down and got into it and talked about social media, his life, being on the radio. He actually describes himself as a guy that tells fart jokes in between Led Zeppelin songs. So here we go. We're going to have a great conversation with CJ. Before we get to that, let me tell you what is going on with me. I have some shows to promote. If you are in Houston, Texas, tonight, May 30th, come on out to the House of Blues Bronze Peacock Room. We will be there. I think we started about 9:30. Doors are at 8:30. I don't think it's maybe it is sold out. I don't know. Usually that show sells out. Tomorrow, we will be at the 1-to-1 bar in Austin, Texas. That's Saturday, May 31st. Skyrocket will be at the 1-to-1 bar in Austin, Texas. That's a great place. Be a good place to see us. It'll be our first time in there. Thursday, June 5th, we will be at Steiner Ranch in Austin, Texas. And then Saturday, June 7th, we will be at the Hill Country Barbecue in Manhattan in New York City. So come on out and check it. You know, if you're living in New York, you want to see some Skyrocket, do that. And also, of course, we have a live podcast recording Tuesday, June 3rd, with my guests, Susanna Schaffel, Elizabeth McQueen, Trish Murphy, and Jazz Mills. Okay, that's great. What have I done this week? I've done a lot of stuff this week, man. I went Tuesday and played some songs with my friend Jeff Plankenhorn at the Strange Brew. I got to play with Brandon Temple and Yogi for the first time. Played with Plank and Yogi, Brandon, and Malford. Great time, man. We played a bunch of songs. Van Wilkes got up and played a song, you know, him from the show. It was a great time. And it was kind of he wanted to introduce me to the audience because I'll be doing a music show Tuesdays in July and August at Strange Brew. I'll fill you in on those. I'll have a lot of special guests. What else did I do this week? Let's see. I practiced with Skyrocket on Wednesday. We had a good full practice. And then I went out to Kimmy Rhodes' studio again. If you guys listen to the show, you know that I've been on her album throughout the year so far. I went in and played on the basic tracks, then went in and did a day of just playing guitars and weird shit on her songs. And then this week I went in and did backing vocals, and we sang my song that's called I Am Falling, if you know this song. She's recorded it for her album, and we did it as a duet, which is interesting. It was a great time working with Kimmy and Gabe out there. I love what she's doing with her record. I can't believe she covered one of my songs, and I'm so honored to be on that record. I can't wait till it comes out. I will tell you all about it. Okay. Before we get into this interview, I want to remind you guys that this show is available on iTunes. You can subscribe to it. When you're there, you leave a comment and a rating, and it leaves our overall rating on iTunes much higher so that we can get better advertising to keep the show free for you, the listener. And also, we have the shows available on Stitcher, which is a phone app, a mobile phone app, and also a pad app. You go to your app store and look up Stitcher, smart radio, smarter way to listen to radio. And you can listen to us there. All right. I hope you guys have had a great week. I hope you're getting into the weekend. Summer's here. It's warming up. I went for a beautiful walk with the lovely Zuri this morning. We had a nice morning walk, and now I'm heading out to Houston to rock the House of Blues. But before I do that, I'm going to put out this interview with my new friend, CJ Morgan, DJ, podcaster, and all-around internet sensation. Funny, funny guy. Enjoy my conversation with the great CJ Morgan. Let's get down. Yeah.
That's when traffic starts getting thick.
People don't know how to drive here. I just went to yoga.
No.
And everyone was late to yoga, except me. So it was like drizzling.
They're not used to it.
No.
No. Amarillo, Texas, where I'm from, you're used to terrible highways and snow and sleet and rain and death.
It just seems like it's going to be like these blowers in the background. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
That's why I need like a professional. You have a professional studio.
Sounds like
summer. You have a podcast, right?
Yeah.
Where do you do it from?
I do them at the radio station.
Okay.
I kind of cheat there and just, yeah.
So what's the deal now when radio stations are supporting that kind of thing, aren't they?
Kind of, sort of.
Like you work at KLBJ.
Yeah.
And they basically run the Dudley and Bob one, right? After show.
I think the deal that happened with that was, Dudley and Bob were going through negotiations again, trying to find an extra way, an extra source to make income. And one of the ideas that had been tossed around for a long time was doing an uncensored podcast, which is so much better. It's this.
Well, they had one for a while that they did. I was on it at Dale's house.
Yeah, yeah. The
Taint and Teabag. Yeah.
But that was kind of its own separate entity in a way. It was a different station thing. But it wasn't. It was still Dudley and Bob, and I know there was a little bit of conflict there, and they weren't sure how it was going to play out. But then it kind of rolled into this new thing of, hey, how about we do a station-sanctioned podcast? We put it behind a paywall. That way there's kind of that separation. If anyone gets offended, they get angry, they whatever. Well, it's like
they're
HBO.
You're paying for it.
So, I mean, come on. It's that extra content. And I think it was a way of the morning show able to try to make up for a bit of the gap they were having in their pay, because there had been so many cutbacks. And Dudley and Bob, from what I understand, they were under contract, and contract employees didn't have to take pay cuts, but the Dudley and Bob show, they took a pay cut every time, and they never got that back. So I think this was one of the ways of trying to at least meet in the middle,
right,
with the company.
And so what about yours that you do there? They're just free? Yeah,
they're just for fun. I started a long time ago, I wanted to do a podcast that made fun of radio shows. This is before I was on even 101X. Mm-hmm. And I started out working in promotions at the radio station. And then I started doing this gig from 5:30 in the morning to 9:30 in the morning, which is where you essentially sit at the front desk and answer phone calls. You let guests in, and I would just get wired on coffee. And I was like, this is going to be great. It's my last year in college. I'm going to work on my homework. I'm going to study. I'm going to do papers. No, I sat on Photoshop making goofy pictures. I sat there editing stupid videos. I would just crank out fake commercials and bits. And I'd listen to the Dudley and Bob Morning Show. I like talk radio. I love morning shows. Like, I like Jason and Deb. JB and Sandy are cool. I mean, there's a lot of good radio, but I don't like songs in between. They interrupt the flow.
Right.
It gets to where I feel like it's a lot of shtick, it's a lot of benchmarks, whereas Dudley and Bob was just talk.
Right.
And in those days, I started out working there. I was kind of still a fanboy of like, oh my God, it's Dudley and Bob.
You were
Bob.
Like a radio fan.
I was
like a radio star fan.
Yeah, I was a radio star. Yeah. And I had been since I was a kid. I've loved radio since I was little. I used to prank call and record DJs when I was, in fifth grade. And I always had a tape deck that was set on pause record all the time.
Yeah.
Just going to when I heard that song.
Yeah.
Or maybe they would play my phone call back on air. I was always ready, and I would always make mixtapes out of that and then make my own radio show out of that. So I was a huge fanboy, and I would sit there and make all these fake commercials and bits. But in those days, I was scared to just send them to Dale or to go in the room. I would always send them to one of the producers or one of the interns, and the interns and producers like, no, we're also competing for airtime.
Right, they're not going to give you this stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it wasn't until
to the competition.
Exactly. It wasn't until the end of doing that where I actually started sending that stuff to Dale. And I would always, it actually started with Charlie Hodge. Charlie would just be like, just send that right to Dale. Don't give it to Angela or Daniel or the interns.
Oh, so that's when you were there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I was there when Charlie and Angela were okay. there. And, you know, I'd worked a lot of events with Charlie and got to know him and how he worked up through radio. And he was, him and Beto were two guys at KLBJ that always were willing to help me, especially Beto, like kind of help and develop. So I started getting those bits on air. I met this guy named Chewy, Erica Alberetti. Uh-huh. Who he was an intern at the time, and I was like, this is one of the funniest humans I've ever met. Like, this is a guy that should be writing monologues on like Letterman or Conan or something right now. That's, he's just got that mind. And I was like, I want to do a podcast. I have this whole bank of unplayed bits and stuff like that. I want to do a fake radio show and mimic, like, instead of having people call in, I would just call people around the office and just be like, caller, you're on the air. And they're like, what are you talking about? And just kind of go with that. So I started doing that. And the idea was something like you do that I think is awesome. You have a different guest on every time as kind of your co-host or just to talk with them.
Right.
And so my third guest in, I was like, this isn't working. Like, bringing my buddies in is not the same as trying to bring a guest. I was like, I'll have Chewy come on. We'll do one. And then I'll see where I go from here.
Right.
We just clicked. We did that for 2 years, kind of hidden. It was always at the radio station. It was, we would go to another studio because technically anything you do in the building becomes their intellectual property. And I was very aware of that.
Right.
So we would go to a studio when no one was in the building. We would do it. We stopped for a while. And I guess what kind of morphed into now as far as podcasting, long story even longer, was Krissa from the morning show, Krissa McAtee or Krissa Jade, whatever radio name is, I recognized kind of the same thing in her, that, oh, we're all funny kindred spirits. They would come in the studio when I was doing middays on KLBJ, and the three of us would just riff on stuff. And I was like, you know what? We should start meeting up here on Saturdays and writing video skits. And we would come up here and we'd write skits and scripts. And then eventually I was like, we should do a podcast. It's so much easier than trying to shoot videos.
Yeah, totally.
And so same thing, we sneak into the KLBJ studio early Sunday mornings when no one's there, professional grade equipment.
Yeah.
We record it, and we did a podcast from my house that wasn't the greatest. I kind of had a mishmash of equipment and then ended up just being really high.
Yeah.
So that kind of turned out all right, but yeah.
It's always hard to figure out because some podcasts are like where you go and you like smoke weed and drink.
Yeah.
And talk. And that's, like, I couldn't run a show like that.
I don't either. I mean, Joe Rogan Experience, for one, that's one I listen to a lot as far as national podcasts.
Yeah.
And just seeing where he'll have guests like, you know, Joey Diaz or Ari Shaffir on, and they're just cranking down edibles and smoking and going. I'm like, how the fuck do you run a show like that? I couldn't. Yeah. Like, that's my wind down, go to sleep drug. And actually, that doesn't even work anymore because it's turned out to where I think I'm going to sleep, and then I'm laying there for an hour, and I'm like, oh, man, am I asleep or am I awake? I don't really know. And then my thoughts are, like, firing off like crazy and going into, like, a little tree of different thoughts. And then I'm like, oh, wait a minute, man. I am awake. And it's weird. I couldn't host a show like that. No way.
There's no way. What did you go to school for? Did you go to UT? Is that what happened?
No.
Were in Amarillo, or what did you do?
Started out in Amarillo right out of high school. Got a job at a machining yard.
Let me ask you a question, though, because this is a serious question. While you're telling me about how you, as a kid, were like recording these shows and making your own radio shows, obviously you were destined to do this, right?
Sometimes I feel
like
that.
What would have happened if you would have ended up like working at like another place in another field? Would you be crushed?
I would have got a girlfriend in Amarillo pregnant. We would have had a couple kids. We would have made a decent living. And then at 34, I probably would have blown my head off.
Okay.
No, just kidding.
I'm glad you made it into radio.
You know, man, you never know what path or where things take you. But I've always felt like I've always had this want and drive, and I still have it. I still am not comfortable where I'm at. I still have, I don't know what it is. It's like a hole. Maybe it's a need for attention. Who knows what it is that creative people have that may, not saying that like, oh, I'm some deep creative artist.
No,
but
no, but there's creative, and then there's also like the personalities that are big, that are kind of like there's something missing, and if Whoever it is that didn't give you what you needed, you're going to get it from a huge group of people that you don't know.
I've got to find it from all these angry people on the internet that tell me I suck. that's where I need validation from.
Yeah.
And even then it's awkward. It's not, even that validation of like, hey, I listen to you, you're awesome. You know, I love it that people listen to the radio or they think anything I put out there is entertaining or made them smile. Or occasionally made him think. I love that. That's an awesome thing. And I try to be very respectful. Just like when I was a kid and older, when I would meet people from radio or somewhere else, you always remember the person that would take time to talk with you, your hand, sure. have a beer.
And the music,
And then, absolutely. Yeah. The same thing. Like after concerts, you know, when they're hanging out in the crowd and you get it, or when I go see stand-up shows where the comedian will hang around after, you love that.
Yeah.
And as one of those guys who wanted to come up in radio or some sort of field, it was always nice to ask a question about that. And I remember the guys that were, I mean, shit, they probably get this all the time. All the time.
Sure.
I'm sure you get fanboys or people that are like, oh man, you know, I've really been playing guitar. Yeah. How do I take it to the next level? And so you don't want to be a dick or a douche in a way, but with me it's, and I'm not, but when people come up and ask me about radio or talk to it or say they like what I'm doing or they're a fan, it's weird. It makes me feel almost uncomfortable. It's like, why are you a fan of me? I'm not doing crap. Go watch some Bill Hicks stand up.
Yeah.
You know, go listen to Bob Schneider or something, someone that actually creates on a regular basis that you can connect with from Austin, not some hack radio douche that's making fart jokes in between Zeppelin songs.
Right.
I do it well, though.
No, you do do it well.
Dick
and
jokes,
you know,
too.
I don't know what kind of criteria makes a guest for this kind of for my show, but you to me are out there, and through social media and then hearing you on the radio sometimes. I don't listen to a lot of the radio unless I'm like in the car.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't really have a radio in your house anymore. Isn't that weird?
A lot of people don't. I mean, I carry around my phone and I'll use... either I'm listening to podcasts or TuneIn.
Right.
That's where I listen to the radio.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't. Not a lot of people jam up the radio. I mean, I remember my dad, Saturday mornings, it was playing an album or it was listening to the radio.
Yeah.
My dad was the guy that was... he was awesome. He would always call into the classic rock station and he knew the answers to everything. If he could get through, my dad was one of those winners. If there was a remote where they were giving away a boat or something like that, my dad would take the kids out. We were all there, you know.
He was a prize whore.
He was a prize whore. And I joke with him and my mom now because, I think when I first started at KLBJ, they went to some radio event. This was like 2008, maybe 2009, after I'd been at the station for a couple years. And the radio event up in Amarillo, it's the Eagle. It's kind of the classic hit station. And Jamie Carr's this guy who had been, he was an instructor at Amarillo College where I went, and he had a show there. He had a show on air and on TV I used to watch as a kid. Great guy. Been in the business for years. And my parents would go to this Monday night thing. I think it was Monday night, where they would have this $2 beers and like pool and give away $100 every Monday night. And my dad doesn't drink a lot, but they were always there, always trying to win that $100 and hanging out. And I was like, God, you guys, because I had to explain to him before what prize whores were at the station. And I was like, God, you guys are such prize whores.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're technically not, but they are.
No, but they have a good time with it.
Oh, yeah. They make a night out of it.
The difference with the prize whores is that it's like they're going to get that thing.
And
they don't even care if it's like, like you're winning free tickets to Bob Schneider. They don't even care if Bob
what it
Schneider.
Is, they yeah. want it. They have
they just
to have
want the
it.
Thing.
The big thing now with prize whores are movie passes. And you can tell there's a group of people who are fans of one station and have to win. It's some weird obsession. But there's a group that goes to every radio event. They find it online. And now what I found out is this same group that's obsessed with winning stuff from radio stations on a Saturday, that's all they do, is they go to every radio station's event. The other thing they do that I used to love doing was going to Goodwill auctions. They go to Goodwill auctions and they buy all the cheap stuff. It's some weird, like, I want to say, like, almost a hoarding mentality.
Yeah.
Sort
it's
of
like
thing.
They have to have this thing that they don't have to pay for.
Yeah.
Or don't have to pay for.
Or get cheap or get a deal on or get a steal. Or you know, one guy showed me this Star Trek DVD set that was in Korean. And he's like, you know, I looked this up on the internet. The American version is going for about $200. I can imagine a Korean version is probably going for about $500, and I got this for $20, and this other lady was trying to bid me up, and so I waited till the next thing she wanted, and I bid her up on that. And it's like, geez, that's...
You know those people, have you ever had a garage sale?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My ex-wife and I would have garage sales and be like, don't show. Like, it does not start till 8, and at 6:15, some weird dude smoking a cigarette on your porch would be like, do you have any World War II memorabilia from Nazis?
Yes.
You're just like, no.
They're already poking around. We had that, my ex-girlfriend and I, that we lived together for 5 years in South Austin. We had a garage sale once, and we found the way to get people coming to the garage sale was to list our best stuff to list on Craigslist. Like, hey, here's this. She had a lot of jewelry she's getting rid of.
Right.
So we would list the jewelry. I would list the things I had on Craigslist. Come get it at the garage sale. So I guess there's, with jewelry, you get a weird collective of people. We said 7 a.m. At 5:45, she's downstairs getting tables out and kind of getting it ready. I'm still in bed, and she's like, hey, there's like weird ladies here. There were cars already there and weird ladies walking up into our garage while she was setting up, you know, an hour before asking about the jewelry. And I'm like, are you serious? We haven't even priced this stuff or thought it out. Like, we got hammered the night before, and we're like, no, we're gonna have a garage sale. Let's get drunk before, not even prepare. And so we're completely hungover and like, oh, yeah, I don't know how to price this stuff. I don't want to get ripped. It absolutely is.
So wait, let's go back. You got out of high school and you went right into radio in Amarillo.
No, not necessarily. No. So in
did
high
school. Sorry, real quick. Did you know Drew Bennett there? Did you know Drew Bennett?
I don't think so.
He's the morning guy on 101X?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Sorry.
No,
I
that's
know
okay.
He's from there and he's a big radio guy.
Anyway. No, I don't think. I mean, if I saw him on Facebook, I might. That's the connection probably. These days. Very, very face visual. So in high school, I started doing, there's these audio visual classes where we do video and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I got into those classes and, you know, it was one of those things where more of the cool kids were the news reporters, but I was the one that was taking the camera and making these stupid videos. And then I would always have like a credit roll at the end. And I would always, after the credit roll, I would have some wacky outtake. And then after that, like it got a little too weird and long for some people, but I would always, when we would have to make fake commercials, which were pretty much, they weren't commercials. They're supposed to be, our job was to produce PSAs in between the news. Okay. And so I would always do the stupidest, like wacky stuff that would air. And I loved doing that course. I was always really good with video, and that's what I wanted to do, video, news, TV, at that point at least. And I was doing the thing where you took a camera around and you'd make jackass videos and you know, push people in a shopping cart, prank people here and there, go into a liquor store, just whatever stupid stuff you could do on video.
Yeah.
So that was, I was like, I'm going to do this. This is awesome. Then I kind of got into, we had a CD burner. This was 99 maybe. We had a CD burner in that class. So, and that was when I was like really big into Wu-Tang Clan and hip hop and a whole bunch of other like indie music. So I would buy CDs from Hastings, and I would burn a bunch of mixtapes, take a few of the CDs back to Hastings, keep a few that I really liked. Because a lot of time back then, I mean, it's such a shitty thing to do, but, you know, as far as, I mean, you're a musician, I'm telling you, I'm pretty much scamming the system.
But it's like you beat Napster to the punch.
Pretty much. Well, and we didn't have internet at my house or anything yet, but so I would do that, because you would get a lot of albums that, there's like one, the single and one other is all that's good. And I mean, this is 98 through 2000. So you would spend, as a kid, you would spend $14, $15 to get one song. You're like, what the fuck is this? So I would just start burning that song. I would keep the albums I liked. I would burn friends' mixtapes. And then that became a thing where I was burning mixtapes. And I was like, well, just cover the cost of the, because then the individual CD itself to burn on was still like $5 or $6. I was like, cover the cost of that. And I started loving just disseminating music to friends and other people. And that's where I started kind of leaning more into the radio aspect, listening to our junior college station and going back to discover new music. Graduation rolls around. I get a job at a metal yard. And our first thing is driving out to Dumas at 6 every morning and using a cutting torch, which is, you know, propane and oxygen, cutting apart these giant machines and rail carts and all that stuff. And I don't know how to use that, but whatever, they kind of show me on the first day. And then I'm just cutting stuff up at a metal yard. I eventually, they had an aluminum smelter that they were going to start using again, because they started getting these old 70s Boeing 747s that were cut up, brought out on truck, and we'd start melting those. So I get
a job out
there.
And then you take
the
aluminum and turn it into something else, or just sell the aluminum?
You melt the aluminum down into huge block ingots, and then you sell it.
Okay.
So I started doing that. then the guys, there was always a rotation of guys in and out doing that. And a lot of times it's because they would find other jobs. A lot of times it's they were short work visas from Mexico, from what I understood. I don't even know, but they would, a lot of dudes were leaving. So I ended up at 18 that summer, a couple months into it, being the quote unquote manager of the aluminum smelter. I hired my buddy on. We have three other guys that were kind of, they were the day shift, we were the night shift, and then at the night it's just me and my buddy just burning aluminum, burning this crap, and a lot, we're just pumping chemicals up in the air. We would have to shut it down when this truck would come with a snorkel. They would have guys coming out there with Geiger counters and suits, because a lot of the weights on those old planes are heavy metals, they're radioactive heavy metals,
and
they would have to find those, and we're doing that, and one day as we get to work, his aunt was a registrar at Amarillo College, which is the junior college. She called him and she's like, hey, listen, school's starting. This is the last day to enroll. What are you and CJ going to do? And we're like, I don't know. I'm going to go to UT. Fucking no plans to go to UT.
Right.
I was the guy that never did homework. I still, even at work, if it's like, hey, CJ, we have this report, I'm waiting till the last day to... Yeah. To put that into an Excel sheet. I never did that. So I was probably a B student that was a low C student just because I never turned shit in. We're like, yeah, I guess we'll go. And she kind of cheated because she was a registrar. She enrolled both of us on the last day possible. So then, boom, we're in junior college. I jumped right into it. It was like second high school for me, but I was the cool kid all of a sudden. Developing into it because I got into student government heavily. I got elected to offices. I got into a radio class, and that's what I loved. And then I started doing a morning show. I was like, hey, how come we don't have a morning show? And the teacher said, well, we never have anyone who's inconsistent, because this was, it was a 100,000-watt community college station, but it had to be turned on at 6 in the morning. We had to power down at midnight and power back up at 6. Every morning.
Okay.
And she hated doing morning shows because people were inconsistent. You had a key to the building. No one would show up.
A bunch of college kids.
It would be 8:30 in the morning before the station was turned on. So she preferred just to have, you know, some of the older students kind of run a music show. And I convinced her after a while to do that. And then for a year, we were fairly consistent with, if it was a rough night, we would get dropped off and we would stay the night there.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was Benny and Theo in the morning. We would sleep in the production room and have parties there and wake up at 6 and do a hungover show. And from there...
Did you start coming up with bits? And like, did you have like things that you...
Yeah, all the time. And in the... I was still taking television courses. So the next door to that was a whole bunch of machines. And I started working at a news station. I was lucky enough to volunteer for a pledge drive, and I was like, I love this stuff. And so I got hired as an editor at a news station to put together clips. And then when everyone would leave at night, everyone would leave. You know, after 11 o'clock news, the building was empty besides a few people in master control. I would fire up the cameras. I would go and record myself and my friends doing dumb videos. And we had this is 2000, we had an editor called the Avid, which is, you know, the precursor to maybe Adobe Premiere, Final Cut Pro. It's the best of the best as far as editing software. I taught myself how to use that. And then eventually I taught myself, back then you could take like a 10-second news video clip, put it on an FTP site, put it on the web. So I was taking these stupid videos I was making. I was putting
before
them on the
YouTube
internet.
And all this
stuff,
you were able to get.
I was
these
showing
videos
friends.
Up.
Yeah, I was putting them up, and they were like, "Oh my god, dude, you can put videos on the internet." And I was like, "Yeah, I can." And they're like, I thought that was my future.
Yeah.
Sure enough, it wasn't.
Well,
thank God YouTube came around. The web got bigger and better, and so I was sitting here in the mornings all the time at school, doing student government, doing videos. Doing a radio show. If I didn't have a good grade in a class, I would just drop it, and I kept doing that until I had a high enough what I thought.
But basically,
GPA.
Like the school stuff took a backseat to video making and morning show.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So 3 years into junior college with no associates, I finally feel I have a good enough GPA. I apply to Texas. I'm going to try to go to Texas. I come down here that spring before I was going to leave. My plan was to, I was bartending at Joe's Crab Shack in Amarillo. My plan was to live in San Marcos, bartend at the Joe's Crab Shack in San Marcos, and commute with my 1991 double cab F-150 my grandpa gave me when he died to Austin every day and go to UT. didn't work out. I came down here. I didn't get into UT, but it was a provisional thing to where I could do some pre-courses and then get in. And even then, I would only be a freshman with like a lot. I was taking, you know, cinema, radio, technical film classes and audio editing and video. None of that stuff transfers from a community college.
Right.
A lot of my history classes didn't either. The stuff I cared about didn't transfer. So I could have been a freshman at Texas. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I'm hanging with my buddy in San Marcos. There's a river that flows through the middle of campus. There's girls in bikinis always on the hill. There's like, maybe I should do Texas State. I applied to Texas State. Didn't get in for some weird reason. And then have someone who had written me a letter for Texas write a letter for them. And eventually got back in, transferred into Texas State, started that year. Made the stupid mistake of joining a fraternity. Did a whole lot more student government. Did some stuff. I was the city council rep for a while. Did all that crap. And luckily, through that fraternity, met a buddy who, this guy named Gus, who had an internship at KLBJ. He had worked his way up to getting hired in promotions, worked his way up to being the promotions assistant. They had a temporary 2-week hiring freeze. He's like, hey, man, if you want to get into radio, this is your chance. So applied, got hired, and yeah, that's where I'm at now.
Wow. What year was that you got there? 2004 or something?
2003, when I started at... the fall semester of 2003 at Texas State. And that was some shit, man. That put me in some debt. Talk about misconceptions going from, you think, oh, I'm bartending in Amarillo, I'm making $100 a night, boom, I'm going to do this way better in San Marcos. No, the things about restaurants are you start from the bottom.
Yeah.
You start from the absolute bottom. You get the terrible shifts.
Yeah.
Rent's coming in. My roommate ended up getting his truck repoed. He had to move to Odessa where his parents had just moved. I eventually got out of that house or our apartment. We owed money for that. My truck had stopped working, you know, a month into being in San Marcos. And then luckily after pledgeship, I was able to move into the fraternity house. It was a piece of shit house, but I was able to move in there. And then we got kicked off campus in 2004.
What was the fraternity?
SAE.
What's that known for?
River raft race in specifically
it's like
in
a
San
river
Marcos.
Raft racing.
It's well, it, no, it's not even a race. Well, I mean, just it's one of the bigger ones nationally. It's a good I really wanted to be in a fraternity. I thought it would be so cool and fun, but I didn't want to be in one of those dudes wearing polos.
No, you wanted to be in like the zany.
I wanted to be like a little bit
house
of both.
Kind of.
I wanted to be a little bit Animal House, but I wanted it to be one of the cool ones, the big ones, the good ones.
Right.
But I also didn't want it to be a bunch of those dudes in white hats, khakis, and polo shirts that are
frat guys
yelling racist shit. Yeah, I didn't want to be one of the good old boy Southern ones. Right. And SAE at Texas State, it had a hugely diverse group. It was one of the three most popular there, and they had this cool-ass event called River Raft Race, which is basically a float on the Guadalupe with hundreds of people all around you. And, you know, I'd been lucky enough to get in to help organize part of that. But I mean, my first year in it, we get kicked off along with the other two biggest ones at Texas State. And so then it goes from, finally I made it, I'm in, this is going to be awesome. Now I can start getting into student government and I have the support group of guys around me that help out, you know, if things get tight at Joe's Crab Shack. And we get kicked off, and then it becomes, oh, shit, now I'm the house manager, and I got to find six dudes to live here constantly to pay rent, to pay bills, to do that. And that was pretty much the next 3 years of Texas State until I moved out with some friends from Joe's Crab Shack.
Wow. These guys all next door are bartenders at Joe's Crab Shack.
Man, I've been craving some Crab Shack. That one down on Riverside, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been to that one. And
they have shows there. They're like Balcony
TV.
Really? You know Balcony TV?
No.
It's like an internet music show.
Wait, yes, I do. I've seen
they
that.
They film
stuff
there. Yeah, they were doing
That's
it
awesome.
Like every Tuesday or something. I would go down there every once in a while. You know, I guess if you follow the rules and go in a month with an R, it wouldn't be bad. I've had a couple of things there.
Yeah.
But it kind of freaks me out, the idea of it. Just the chain of Joe's Crab Shack. Just the amount of frozen seafood.
Yeah, it's all Cisco seafood, this and that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to eat better than I was back in the day. But man, when I worked at that Crab Shack, I would just steal food. It was so great.
What did they do? They give you, I mean, they got to give you, did they give you like a, some kind of deal on the
food? It was awesome. That was my support system too for a while, because I would park, it was right across from campus. I would park there when I had a working vehicle. I would eat there because we got half off. And then while I was working, I was always coming up with concoctions. I would grab some of the salad shrimp, dump it in a thing full of butter, cut up some garlic, and then throw that in the steamer and make my own look like it was just, that's how I ate.
That sounds delicious.
For most of college was that frozen Cisco seafood.
Wow. So then you got into to KLBJ as an intern, or did just the MS?
No, I was hired.
You were hired.
I was hired as a promotions coordinator.
And so what does that entail? Like, you were part of the thing that would do the remotes and stuff like that?
Setting up the table, popping tents, putting the prizes out, driving the vehicles to the events.
Did we ever do stuff? Did I ever? Because I did some stuff. Like,
you did
weird,
the
like
prom,
opening.
Right?
And Skyrocket did that, yeah. But I did, even before that, like the opening of like a Gold's Gym.
It was stuff Dale like that.
And Bob.
That was probably pre-2007, right?
Yeah.
Because we, it's definitely not as been as cool or big as then. Not that an opening at a Gold's Gym is the most exciting thing, but yeah.
Those things are always so weird. And I always said yes to them. I think that's why they were like, okay. And I always had a good time hanging with Dale and Bob, so I guess that they were like, oh, yeah, we can get him
along. Those guys will make it fun, and if they're...
And I'm not one of those musicians that's like, what, I'm at a fucking Gold's Gym?
What is this
shit?
Is
beneath me. I'm always just like, I can't believe I'm at a Gold's Gym. This is so weird.
This is insane and weird.
As I've always wanted to play like a strip bar, I've always wanted to do... AJ Vallejo was telling me they have this metal band that they do. And they do shows at the strip bar.
What is that metal band called?
Bang.
Because Emmy Robbins in it, right? Or is this something
different?
That's a
different band, That's Alex band.
Oh, so, Alex, sorry, guys.
I can't remember what that... They all look alike. They know it.
They do. Well,
all the Vallejos.
Yeah,
I don't mean all Guatemalans in general.
Yes, the Vallejos do.
So once you got into promotions, you were doing putting those together and setting them up and kind of like...
Yeah.
And then where'd it go from there? How did you get on air through the story that you told me before doing your bits?
Yeah, just kept, I kept plugging away at it, kept doing everything I could. I would say yes to everything. They found out I could do video stuff, so I would do that. I was always sending, if I had anything that I thought was funny, I was sending it to on-air people around the building. When I would do those morning Photoshops, I started doing a Photoshop every Friday when tacos would come in. Mm. With some kind of current theme or whatever that was happening. And as I got better at Photoshop, the pictures would get better. People around the building started knowing me, and I started just hammering away, annoying the shit out of people. And then I remember one day, Lynn from 101X was arguing with my friend Tammo about an air shift. And she's like, I told you I can't do this weekend. I just can't. And I was like, I'll do it. And he didn't think anything, went back to typing. And he walks around the corner, and he's like, you serious about that? Trevin does a much better impersonation of Lynn Barstow than
I
do.
I know
him though. But I was like, yeah. And he's like, okay, send me an air check. We'll see us. And went right into the studio, recorded an air check, sent it to him, and he kind of worked with me. And then that's how I started Weekends on 101X. Did that for a long time, maybe close to a year or more. And then kind of was like, hey, we don't do overnights. What about bringing back the third shift shuffle? I'll start tracking overnights and doing that 5 days a week.
What do you mean they stopped having a person, like a personality on there, just playing ads and playing music?
Just it was just an autopilot music, which is pretty much, I mean, I wasn't live overnights by any means, but Chuck used to do that, that does No Control. And he's now our building's main facilities manager and one of the main engineers, so... I think he just kind of grew out of that role. I'm not sure when he stopped doing the third shift shuffle on 101X, but it had been vacant for a while, and I was like, I'll do overnights, you know, even if it's just paying an hour a day, I'm clocking or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do it just to be on air, and I kept doing that. And eventually it got to where I was starting to get sale. I was always good with salespeople and, you know, being in the promotion side, I knew how to save, turn in stuff, and how to, you know, jack off the client just right. So they were happy and the salespeople were happy that, you know, the job was getting done right and they were having results from it. So they started asking me to host events when I could for 101X, like do those remotes, be the Dale and Bob and whatnot. And I got a few opportunities to do that. but you know, 101X has a lot of personalities that clearly aren't going anywhere. I thought the same with KLBJ, who I worked for promotion. At this time, I was the promotions assistant, which was the main dude setting up tents and remotes behind the promotions director.
Right.
So our boss, Chase Roop, and I had talked about transitioning to KLBJ after Laura, I think it was Laura Waits. Yeah, I think after she was going to leave after ACL Fest in 2011, she was going to, you know, other pursuits and not do her weekend show on KLBJ. And I was like, yeah, I'd love to do weekends on KLBJ. Maybe we could turn this into an overnight thing too. It's musically, I guess 101X was probably a little bit more of a fit with someone my age. But you know, KLBJ, I knew the listeners from all the events. I was always on the morning show by that time, like doing bits. I would sit in with them. I would talk, always annoying Dale with something stupid I thought of. And, so, you know, listeners were a little bit familiar with me. So I was like, yeah, that'll be great. This will be awesome. Doing a podcast at the time, whatever goofy shit I could do to get attention, whatever hugs from dad I could get. And I got lots of hugs from dad. I don't know where my need to have that attention. Maybe because I was terrible at sports and everything else. And I always wanted to be really good
at something, yeah,
but
yeah.
I was never good at anything except for making people laugh. So, so I kept plugging away at it and got to where I was about to start doing weekends, and then boom, out of nowhere, you never thought this was happening. I thought KLBJ was so cool because we had Dudley and Bob on for 4 hours, and then we had Charlie and Matt for 4 hours. We had two more. We're like, you know what? Fuck you, radio. Look at KLBJ. We have two morning shows back to back, essentially.
Yeah.
And I'm all about personality. Like I said, I like talk radio more. Yeah, I'm all about personalities, and that's the only thing that's going to make, in my opinion, radio a little less stale. Is a lot of the personality. Because even when it comes to new music discovery, for me, even with a lot of the stations we have, and you know, even KUTX and those groups, and Coop and KVRX, like new music discovery for me, a radio guy, is still only a fifth of it's probably radio. The rest of it's blogs, Pandora, going and seeing live shows, getting there early for whoever's opening. Being at a bar when someone's playing that I've never heard of, and a lot of troll on the internet, Spotify, radio to find it. So I was ecstatic that we had this boom in personalities all day long. We had Kirsten in afternoons, who's kind of that sexy, sultry female. Then we had Beto at nights, and Beto's just he is the Austin radio DJ more than anyone out there. He's such a badass. And
it's interesting. That's true. That's, yeah. He became the guy that took. Do you know Johnny Walker?
Yeah.
He took the Johnny Walker role when Johnny was
gone. He absolutely did, man. And I've briefly got to meet Johnny once. It's always been really brief. One time when we were in the middle of recording a podcast, and Johnny and Billy came in, and I didn't quite recognize them at first, mm-hmm. and they were kind of like looking through CDs, and Billy's like, oh, sorry, we're just trying to find something. I was like, oh, go ahead, whatever. We're goofing off doing a podcast, whatever you want. And then they left, and I think I even said it when we were doing the podcast. I was like, I think that was Johnny Walker that was just in here. And I was like, I can't believe I didn't have the conscience of mind to see if while Johnny Walker's in what's his fucking studio, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To sit down with us, if he wanted to. It might have been rude to ask him or putting him on the spot, but to see if Johnny wanted to sit down and tell us some of the old radio stories, because man, hell, he was doing it when radio was in a sense something, especially in Austin, you know. And Johnny, one of those fucking legends we had.
He was out every night, you know. I mean, he was hanging out with all of us, all the time.
He was doing it, man. Yeah. He was that embodiment of radio, perfect time, perfect city, perfect place.
Yeah, perfect dude for it too.
And now it just seems like it's kind of lingering in Austin, you know.
Yeah.
It's probably like being in Austin now is probably like, I mean, this is a stupid comparison, but you know, maybe being in San Francisco in 1975, it's like you just missed it.
Yeah.
Whatever was here, whatever
buzz was. Yeah, yeah.
It's still growing. It's still awesome. This stuff's still happening. It's a new vibe and scene now, but it's like you just missed it.
Yeah. That's 10 years. Era, slacker era.
Yeah. Yeah.
People that were here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing. How are you, so you, I mean, you follow a playlist,
yeah.
When you're working, and it's pretty specific. The KLBJ, like, it's turned into Zeppelin, Halen, Ozzy,
We have
Stones.
We have a chunk of core artists that changes every year, and the playlist is constantly flexing and changing. But yeah, it's a lot of the same. I mean, every station has their, you know, we don't like to think of it as just classic rock. It's rock, but
I mean, to me, even like 101X, it doesn't. I mean, it plays new music, but to me, it seems like there's a lot more of a Smashing Pumpkins like mid '90s.
Kind of vibe, yeah.
Vibe, yeah. Is the vibe, but they'll still play new music. But that's really the core of what's going on.
Yeah, there's still that alternative quote station.
But it's weird because I mean, it seems like all stations are like that because KUTX is a new station that turns you on to totally new music that you won't hear on commercial stations. But at the same time, you're going to hear some 1974 Gram Parsons song. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like it's weird. It just seems like everything, even the Fringe.
Yeah.
So you said they'll play new music, but then also you hear like you a 1987 Cure song.
Well, you know, I listened to when you had JB and Ray on, and it is that playing it safe radio. And the weird thing about it is you would think in this day and age with so much competition for eyes and ears that radio's best bet would be to break new ground, to play stuff you're not going to, if you're playing Floyd, playing deeper cuts, if you're maybe breaking a new artist in Austin that sounds like Floyd, maybe, you know, instead of playing this awesome rock guitar god Hendrix and Clapton, having Eric Tesmer come on and shred for a little bit. But that's not the case at all. They found, even in these stupid radio studies, they found that even making it more, like even shrinking it down more, making it more safe, more homogenized, and playing, especially on like Mix and Kiss and pop stations, beat stations, whatever, that really like hitting those familiar popular tracks again and again and again is the absolute best way to cheat the stupid system of you know, the little ratings device and the magic people that exist out there. And
I've done those. I've been a part of those studies, like on the other
really?
Side. Yeah.
Next time you do, please just turn KLBJ on in here and just put it on a ceiling fan. That way it's always moving.
I didn't. Yeah. I didn't. No. I went to a call out like a research place where you sit there with a dial.
Oh, one of those. Yeah.
And they play
a
song, like, you know, 15 seconds of a song and you turn a dial. I can't remember if I did any for KLBJ. I do remember there was a Tejano one once that was pretty weird. And some other stuff. I think I knew someone that worked at the research place, and like whenever they didn't have enough people,
like, hey, dude, please come down. There's some pizza.
But I'm Hispanic. Like I'm Cuban.
I look like it.
There was like, oh, we need an Hispanic. Like we're not getting enough dudes in here. Like come in. We need an Hispanic guy in his 30s or whatever. So what I was gonna say though is I feel like in general culture and I mean music, movies, television shows, things like that are now just content, right?
Yeah.
They're things that people made, but to me, like when I meet young people, there's no longer like, hey, I like the Sex Pistols. The Bay City Rollers are fucking stupid, right? Or I like the Ramones. You don't listen to the Bay City Rollers. You've drawn a line.
Yeah.
This is what I do. That's nothing to me. But you get a kid now who thinks that, you know, Blitzkrieg Bop by the Ramones is just as, you know, like I Only Want to Be With You by the Bay City Rollers.
It's just as cool. There's no context. There's no.
Yeah, there's people that will tell me like, oh yeah, I love the Beatles and I love, you know, like some really horrible cheese band that they equate as the same, you know, like Hall & Oates. You know, I love Hall & Oates, but you know, like I love Hall & Oates and the Beatles. Like, wow,
it's
those
like, wait
aren't
a minute,
really...
they're starkly different.
Yeah, they're really different.
What do you
one
mean?
One is like some cheesy pop band. The other one's like a. So to me, it's weird. The more I see like radio changing like that, it seems like almost like that Bob format.
Yeah, and Ray mentioned on the podcast that, you know, the Bobs are driven to not take away from their competitors. And
right.
I was like, oh man, I disagree. Bob is killing KLBJ as far as like our two in-house stations. But you're right, as far as like the Bob being, it's the safe playlist. It's comfortable music. It's stuff that you can turn on in your coffee shop, in your hair salon, wherever. And you're not going to have me coming on making a fart joke or a dick joke in between the songs. Or it's not going to be the unsafe word. You know, we still on FM, we still play a few songs that will say shit every now and then or bitch. Like, you'll just barely hear it. We don't have a lot of edited songs, especially late at night. It's that safe format. It's the comfortable music. And it is kind of taken. You're taking REO Speedwagon and then putting it next to the Zombies. Well, not even Zombies, it's probably too old. And then you're having the Beatles, then you're having Hall and Oates,
right.
And then you're coming back to Mariah Carey. And so it's making in people's minds, it's, oh, these are all their hits. They're all the same.
The oldies stuff, when you said the Zombies, that, like, Zombies, like, they'll play the Beatles, they'll play the Stones, they'll play Hendrix, and, like, you know, there's sort of those quintessential things, but those, the whatever station would have played Happy Together by the Turtles.
We don't get Zombies, those, Animals, Turtles, older kind of, Beatles. You don't get, that's one of my favorite areas of music, is that kind of psychedelic late 60s, whatever you want to call
music,
it, even some of the Hollies, even some of that, just because it's a little package, but it's also still, for the time at least, a little edgy. It's fun, it sounds good, it makes you just want to, you know, smoke a joint or eat some mushrooms and just lay back and fucking listen to it loud.
Yeah,
but you don't hear that, and a lot of it, the term in radio that I hear is because it's crispy, it's old, it skews to and you know, the oldest demographic that I guess radio stations a lot of times seek out is 54. So after that, you know, we don't want to play music that people,
all right, so yeah, 54 people don't care about Elvis really. Like,
yeah, I
the
guess
64
so.
Year old yeah, people
yeah.
did. Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't hear that. And then there's a lot of those stupid studies, and I say stupid because I do believe they're all stupid, because you know who picks up, you hear it with political surveys, you hear it with music surveys. You know how they do a lot of these surveys? They do it, they still do the phones, they still call landlines.
Yeah.
Who has a fucking landline?
Yeah.
You know?
They're still doing
it. Only dumbasses. That's kind of stupid.
Well, this band I was in, Gowdy, we were on Elektra, and we had a whole radio campaign. And at one point, I remember they were like, oh, you know, what song came out at the time that was like directly our competition for the space on the radio, and we lost to them.
That sucks.
Papa Roach. Cut my life into pieces. Yeah, that song, our songs came out on the same Tuesday.
Oh, man.
And they were telling me, like, oh, yeah, and the call-outs, so you guys didn't do well. And I was like, what's a call-out? Well, we call these people, and, yeah, we play them 10 seconds of every, of
over
like, five different songs. And I was just
like, wait a minute.
Really? That's terrible. I wouldn't like my song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that was such a weird, it totally changed my perspective on the music business at that point. I was like,
these guys,
I'm just going to do what I do. And like, you can't really second guess,
no,
you know,
well,
and you can't do it in, I mean, you're doing what I like that you're doing is that you're bringing a personality to it. You have this playlist, it's going, but there is a unique voice that you tune in to CJ to hear what CJ has to say, because you know that CJ is going to bring you a certain thing.
It's going to be whatever, you know, and I'm the one that throws a lot of it out on the internet, and I'll go do these weird public events and things that, you know, aren't typical of a rock radio DJ, just to get that attention. I'm hoping if someone's like, wait a minute, that dude's funny and weird. Wait, he has a radio show too? All right, yeah. I got to check this shit out. And that's what, you know, back to what we were saying earlier with KLBJ, with, you know, guys like Dudley and Bob and Matt Bearden and Charlie Hodge and Matt Sadler and Beto, is you have this amazing personality, and they got rid of Charlie, which sucked. I don't know the full story on that.
That's one of my best friends.
Don't know the whole thing on it, but it was shocking to find out. And that's when I went from weekends to filling in on evenings.
Uh-huh.
And then I was just lucky that the company was lazy, and 8 months later, instead of hiring someone new, they just were like, well, CJ's right here, we'll hire him. So I was an evening DJ. And then Kirsten, who's now over at Radio Margaritaville, she left for that job to become program director. And they're like,
oh,
hey.
Oh, Kirsten Rehnquist.
Yeah, Kirsten.
I love her.
She left, and I started filling in middays for her at the time. And same deal. They interviewed a lot of people. I talked with two of my good buddies, Beto, obviously, and my friend John Laird, who runs a music blog, Side One Track One, which is a lot of, you know, younger Austin artists and other bands that are coming through that he's, I don't know, trying to discover or break, but he's been putting on a lot of cool shows and stuff. So he's kind of in the scene in his way, and, you know, is very cognizant of what's happening at KLBJ and what's going on in radio and all this stuff. So I asked both of them, like, what do you think? Do I have a chance to do this? And it was kind of like, no, you don't. But I decided that I'm not going to try to, and this is a year and a half after Charlie had left. And so I wasn't going to do the Charlie thing where I'm doing long breaks of bits and talking and hanging out. And I wasn't going to do the Kirsten thing where I'm just talking about music and keeping it quick and you know, being a good DJ. Like, Kirsten's awesome.
Yeah.
But her and Charlie were very different on the radio. And I was like, I'm not going to be either one of them, but I'm still going to be me. I'm probably not going to get this job. The best thing I can do, and this is kind of what Beto told me, was do a kick-ass job, do the best I can, still be me, and hope that after sitting in with the morning show, doing middays, I get enough people that like me that will come back and listen in the evening. But
right.
They ended up, again, interviewing people, having a hiring freeze, taking forever, getting lazy, and being like, well, all right, well, congrats. You're now in middays.
Well, then you're good. I mean, that's a good... That's a good transition.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, I was still, it was kind of weird being, you know, it was funny being the rocking KLBJ DJ Monday through Friday. And then on Saturdays, I was the guy setting up the tent for John Dromgoole at the Garden Center and, and running an audio board in my polo shirt for the AM station. It was kind of a weird thing doing both.
Yeah.
But, you know, it pays the bills, and that's what you got to do in radio, almost any industry these days.
Yeah,
that's, you know, you got to hustle. You got to hustle.
It's not,
which is fine. I'm lucky. I'm lucky I'm not roofing houses anymore, working at an aluminum smelter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad I don't work at Whole Foods or paint houses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm lucky.
But I'm glad I can do it if I have to. If I get laid off from radio, I can go back and wait tables and roof houses.
How is your, where can, is there a central location where people can find all your stuff, like the podcast? Is there like a cjmorgan.com or something?
Yeah, I got
it. Sorry, I didn't write that down.
No, that's fine. The best spot is probably klbjfm.com/cj is for my, the radio stuff that I do different things daily.
Right.
My best archives of crap as far as the podcasts I do, one's the mixtape, which is a lot of just new, whatever music I'm listening to every month. And the other one's Mexican Mustache and Madame, which is Chewy, Krissa, and myself.
Yeah.
Darkives.com, D-A-R-K-I-V-E-S. People always...
Darkives.
Darkives.com. Right. That's where I started storing and putting all this wacky shit I put on the internet up. And for the longest time when I was saying it, people would be like, Darkguys.com? I don't get that. So then I started another website with that. That was exactly what it sounds like.
Dark guys.
Yeah. I'd be like, oh, look at this sassy Puerto Rican. And it would just be a different nationality that I would post once a day just to have that other
That's
website.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Keeping it alive. Well, man, I appreciate you. I've heard you on the radio, and then we're friends on Facebook, and I just, every time I see something of yours, it makes me laugh. Sometimes it makes me think you were post your thoughts on the political landscape.
Yeah.
You're a harsh critic of that.
I try not to get too into it because with politics and religion, you're going to alienate a lot of people. And I want to think of myself as someone that makes people laugh, but there's so much bullshit going on. Sometimes I can't keep it in. I did. I was heavily involved in politics in San Marcos. I hate it. It's a greasy, ugly, stupid business. And it's all just this huge joke and a fucking lie. And having friends from Amarillo that I went to school with and being in Texas and then living in Austin and seeing all these different sides of the spectrum and the left-right paradigm and having friends who have worked in you know, state and national, city to state to national campaigns and have worked in both sides for the Democrats and the Republicans and just knowing what bullshit it all is.
There's
There's not. I feel like... I'm not eloquent enough yet to where eventually I would like to be someone who's could make you laugh on the radio and actually make a good point about it. Now I'm not. Now I'm just throwing shit at the wall. I'm just diarrhea mouth. I'll see something that pisses me off. I'm like, I'm going to go to Facebook and type about this.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. It is what it is, but it's a greasy business.
It is a great.
You're always going to lose friends and people when talking about it because it is so. People are so passionate about it. It's a ball game. It's your football team against mine.
Yeah.
And how dare you talk about my fucking football team?
That's basically what it is. Like, people just kind of calling each other names.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've been in on that. I've definitely been a part of it. And then you just got to step back and be like, wait a minute. Wait.
Yeah.
Both of these guys were getting money from the same place. Wait. Yeah. What?
Yeah. This is how this works.
Yeah.
It's not good. Ugh. Do you ever see yourself with like a show? What's it, Jeff?
Jeff Ward?
Jeff Ward.
Yeah, Jeff
like
Ward.
That kind of thing.
Awesome. Perhaps.
That's the kind of thing, though, that you, that's the kind of goal.
eventually, I would like to do a talk show. I would like to delve into stand-up comedy. That's always been the joke and the thing I'm going to do. The last one of your podcasts I listened to was with John Toll, and I was like, how the fuck am I going to follow that up? But he's such an awesome dude.
Can I tell you something? One night I went to go see him. Lucas Melendez had a show. I don't know if he still has it, but it was like a late show at the Velveeta Room on Fridays. I don't really have Fridays off very often, but one night I did, and I went with this friend of mine to go see the show, and John was on the show. And John, before John went on, Mary Lynn Rice Cub was in town doing something, some kind of movie or something, and she came in, asked Lucas, hey, can I go up and do, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something? And he was like, sure. He went up. He did his thing, and at the end of his set, she went to Lucas, and she was like, I can't follow that.
She's like, I'm not following John Toll.
Take me off the list. She literally would not follow John Toll.
Oh, come on. You got to do that. That's the only way to...
Even
if you're going up and eating plates of shit, you know, it's still...
Yeah, and
he's awesome.
Yeah.
Even as a human being in person, just like being around John, he's got this vibe.
And he's been doing a lot of work with you guys, right?
Oh, yeah. Beto does a podcast called The Show Before the Show, and John Toll's a regular guest on that. And you know, John Toll, the man of a million podcasts, too. Yeah. He comes around the station a lot. Always cool to see him. I saw him at Moon Tower this year. Talked to him for a little bit. I mean, awesome dude.
I went the first night of Moon Tower. Yeah. So my grandfather was real sick. That's when
I remember that.
I took off the next day. But I saw some pretty amazing. I saw Bobby Slayton for the first time. And Nick Thune?
Yeah, Nick.
Both amazing. Yeah. Nick Thune was amazing. Like, I didn't realize how funny that guy was. I've heard him on podcasts, but I've never seen him.
It's always so different seeing those sets, and it's weird with Moon Tower because a lot of these guys are bouncing from place to place to place.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing the same set or similar set sometimes three times in a row.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting seeing how it develops from one room to another. And I saw Matt Bearden a lot. Just ended up being not purposely following him, just ended up seeing that, and it was kind of cool seeing someone I know that's a respected Austin and even bigger comedian, just how their sets changed and developed and got to see then, you know, guys like Colin Quinn, who just bounced into a middle of set and was like, hey, can I do 5 minutes? Go in and do what he does. Bobcat Goldwaith, who's awesomely weird and so many, I can't even think of all the names who I've seen, but a lot of awesome people.
Yeah. That's just, last year I had one of those experiences like that. I went around with a few guys to different shows, like with them to shows they were doing. And it is like South by Southwest. If you go and kind of like hang out with the band who's playing five shows in a day, it is interesting to watch all five, you know, they're short sets. And so you get to see like how do you keep it up?
How do you keep that
every
energy?
Time? How do you have that hard on every time you have to go do your thing five times a day? That's not normally what you do. None of these comics, well, I guess they do when they're in their cities, they go around and do little sets places, so I guess they're kind of warmed up,
but
like
usually
that.
Not that many times in a night.
No,
I mean, it's incredible. Yeah, South by's a weird thing too with that.
So you didn't enter into the funniest person in Austin? Are you too famous to do that?
No,
because you would
all.
Win
I'm
wouldn't
not
you
famous at all. No, not at all. There's some guys that are incredible that no way. But I want to.
Somebody was telling me like the people from the news are the judges and shit on that, which I thought was kind of lame.
It mixes up. I've got to be a judge the last couple.
Oh, good.
I know Beto has. Bob Fonseca is always one of the main judges at the end. There's been some other radio DJs. There's LT Robinson. She books comedians for the UT Student Center or something like that. There's a mix of business people.
Oh, that's good.
TV. It's a good mix. It's a very... very random thing. My first experience judging it 2 years ago or a year ago, I have a very different sense of humor than the people I was judging with, and it was clear that they didn't like anything that went dark, awkward, too deep, too political.
Yeah.
They liked a lot of one-liners and fun stories and that kind of thing. I was like, oh, this sucks. But this year it was a completely different experience. It seemed that every time we judged, the people who we... at least the number one person was all circled on all of our lists, and it was a lot better experience.
Good.
So it's a weird thing. Judging comedy is so subjective and weird.
Yeah, totally.
Anyways, I mean, it's a good competition, and a lot of, you know, Lucas has won it in the past, and Ramin Nazer and Chris Cube has got second a couple of years in a row. The cream of the crop does certainly seem to rise and move on, but if I ever get into it, I don't know if I would do that. I do have bits and I have pieces that I could think I could make in a good set. I started hosting trivia 4 years ago just to get comfortable on a microphone in front of a crowd and rolling with people. And eventually I want to do it, but I don't want to do it where I'm known. I want to do an open mic where I don't know anyone in the crowd, record myself, see how that goes, maybe do the same set or tweak it and go to San Antonio where it's a different audience than Austin, mm-hmm. maybe do a room in San Marcos, maybe in Waco. You know, that if I'm going to do stand up, I don't want to. There are two different schools of thought. One comes from Matt Bearden, who told me, no, you go and you do it and you don't bring any friends and you see what it's like being real in front of a crowd, how they respond. Matt Sadler, both of whom worked at KLBJ, told me, he's like, no, you bring all your friends, you pack that room and you build up your confidence and feeling good on stage and you have them laugh, and then you wean off from that and start doing it alone. So
seems like they'd both work. I mean, just a matter of if you're...
For both of them, yeah. Yeah, it does seem like
it's almost like that's the kind of person it would tell the kind of person who would quit smoking with vapor or just like a cold turkey.
Just cold turkey.
You know what I mean?
No,
so Bearden's
no
like a cold turkey guy. Sadler's a vapor guy.
How did you feel when you started getting up on stage for that first... What was that first experience for you like, and how did you get over? Do you still get nervous when you're doing it?
There's a level that I do get nervous, but the one natural trait that I had is being in front of people, and it doesn't intimidate me.
Really?
If there's one person that means a lot to me or that I want them to love me, that means a lot, like another artist or something. But otherwise, the general people, I'm very...
It's never really bothered
you? It doesn't,
you.
Yeah, I think that's my actual natural God-given talent.
Yeah, yeah.
Is I'm not scared by that. Like music, I had to learn, I had to work on it, I had to learn how to sing in tune and play in time and do all this kind of stuff. But being in front of people is, my mind sometimes. Even family members that I'm close to, my grandfather's funeral, like I was like, oh, you're going to do a reading to my aunt? And she was like, I could,
don't know how to do
and
it,
I'm like,
yeah.
Wow, that's so weird. Cause that, I don't even think twice. Like
before doing it.
No. Yeah. So yeah, I'm not scared.
I still get nervous every time.
You?
Even if it's just with trivia or little things here and there. But once I'm up there, it's a lot better.
Yeah.
Once you get going, but
I think that God,
especially performing musically, that just blows. I have no musical ability. I wish I did. I absolutely wish I did. I've tried playing with keyboards and MIDI controllers and just like...
Trying to make music in the box computer thing.
At the very basic, just making beats. Because a lot of the goofy videos I do, I'll need to put together a score.
Yeah.
Because you can't put anything copyrighted on YouTube or you can't put it out there. So I'll play with that. But there are times when it's like, man, I wish I could take what I'm feeling and make it into a song. But just doing both.
So I didn't turn off the air conditioner. I didn't turn my phone down.
Yeah, I was like,
it's like, what is wrong with me? I'm a terrible host. Leaf guys are outside. Well, man, CJ, thank you so much for coming.
And, yeah, thanks for
I'm
having
glad
me.
That
it's
we
incredible,
met.
Man.
We
yeah.
should, let's hang out sometime.
Definitely.
And people can check out your podcast, you said, at...
Darkives.com.
I was going to say black guys.
Maybe I should go add more to darkguys.com. It's been a while since I've updated that website.
Yeah.
You could be my first Cuban on there.
I would love to be. Yeah. I've got a new Throwback Thursday photo on Facebook today where I'm actually wearing a Speedo and I'm 10 years old. So, well, thank you so much for coming, and your dog looks comfortable in my place. I'm glad.
Oh, yeah. Fell right asleep.
Yeah. And people will tune in and listen to you. I will for sure.
Yeah,
and
thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate you having me.
Too. What a great story. I think CJ Morgan is a great guy. I'm so glad that he was able to come over and talk to me. If you want to hear him on KLBJ, you can, and you don't live in Austin, Texas, you can go to klbjfm.com. Look him up, man. Find him there. Go to his thing. He does all kinds of silly things for just the sake of being silly, which, honestly, I love people for that. And more power to you. You're going to do some stuff that's just going to be subversive and weird. God damn it, I love you. That's what I'm saying. Okay? So CJ Morgan is one of those people that falls into my category of love nut jobs. So, hey, guys, thank you so much for listening. Remember that when you're on the internet looking for KLBJFM.com, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast. And please, while you're there subscribing, don't forget to rate and leave a comment, as it helps us with our overall rating, which helps us secure advertising to keep the show free to you, the listener. Also, if you are interested in following what's going on this show, you can go to How Did I Get Here, our Facebook page, and like it. Or you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Twitter if you have an extremely short attention span, and Instagram if you just can absolutely not read. Which, hey, I'm not judging you. I'm a nice guy, okay? Don't forget to get out there and get involved with your own life and get involved with How Did I Get Here? And don't forget, does anybody remember Laughter on the Tasty Podcast Network, which starts very soon? Go check it out. You can also find many great shows there, the shows of Lucas Melendez, the shows of John Toll, and, of course, the Hodgecast, which I'm a guest on once every couple of weeks, except for he hasn't had me back in 3 weeks.
Watching the detectives. Watching the detectives.